Well, why don't we begin at the beginning? Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, and it's nice to finally meet you. I've watched a lot of your videos up since I searched C.S. Lewis, Sam Harris into YouTube, and you came up. I was trying to get Sam Harris to talk about C.S. Lewis. I was always surprised that he never brought him up. But
Huh.
that was a good video too. And then it showed me the Jonathan Pageot. But yeah, I'll tell you about my life a little bit. I
Do you
was
think
born in
Sam
college.
Harris knows anything about C.S. Lewis?
Well, I know that I saw who was his mentor, the older new atheist.
Daniel Dennett?
I think I saw one by Daniel Dennett, so I know that he knew about him, but I don't think Sam Harris has read him much.
Oh,
Yeah,
interesting.
as far as I know.
That's an interesting question. I had never said C.S. Lewis, Sam Harris. Wonder if, so that's very interesting. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. So I was born in Colorado, and I lived there till I was five. Obviously, I don't remember much of that time, but when I was five, my family and I moved over to Iowa, and we lived there with our cousins and grandparents. We're all there, so that was nice. And I lived there going to private Christian schools, and going to a Missouri Synod Lutheran church. And lived there till I was 10. And then we moved back to Colorado over to where my dad's side of the family was. And I've lived here ever since then. Still went to a private Christian school called Emmanuel Lutheran. And so I really grew up with a Christ-centered education. We went to chapel twice a week. And every day I'd come home, my dad would ask me a Bible verse. I would try and cheat him by giving him the same one every day. Mount up like mount up on wings of eagles is what I would tell him every day. So going to a private school after I got done with that, it was a class of about 20. So for high school, we decided to go to a public school. And that was kind of a shock for me personally. Not just because I'd grown up in kind of an insular environment, but I've always been a pretty shy person, and used to have a pretty bad stutter. I still do a little bit, and it'll probably come out a little bit in this video. So going to a school of hundreds of people in my class was a little bit daunting, but I got used to it. And I know you guys talk a lot about disillusionment and deconstruction, and I didn't get much of that in high school. It just wasn't something that people really talked about much. But then out of high school, I took a semester off to kind of see what I wanted to do. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I joined the Air Force Reserve. And at the time, it wasn't, it was kind of just because I was confused and I thought it would give me a good foundation for the rest of my life for whatever I wanted to do, which it definitely has. And I'm grateful to still be in the reserves. I do avionics on the C-130s. And then, so after I got done with my active duty orders, because you have to go through tech school and training. And after I got done with that, about a year and a half, I went back to Iowa to a college over there, played some football, studied in environmental science at a Division III school, and then decided that wasn't what I wanted to do. So I came back to Colorado, took an EMT course, got my EMT certification, applied for some firefighting positions. It's always been a dream of mine. Didn't get in. So I ended up going to work at the YMCA up in the Rocky Mountains for maintenance. And I guess that was the time in my life where I came back to considering deeper questions of faith. That was when I first read C.S. Lewis, because the only time that I had heard of C.S. Lewis was the Narnia books. And I never read them. I was never very interested in them. I thought of them as just fairy stories, as Tolkien would say. And so I was never really interested in that. And I thought that Mere Christianity would be similar to a lot of other sola scriptura evangelistic appeal altar call books, essentially. And C.S. Lewis has a few in there, so he does his duty.
Yeah.
But it was refreshing to see a take on faith that was considering all the options and saying that I'm going to present the essentials of Christianity, but I'm also going to tell you about the other options and why those don't really fit with Christianity. And then, so I worked at the YMCA, and it was a big thing where they bring in college students to work for the summer, and they do their Bible studies and their communion with each other. I wasn't really part of that. I kind of hung out with all of the non-believers.
Okay.
And so it was funny working there because some of the non-believers were very resentful of the believers because they thought of it in a way that I sometimes think about it when I'm feeling angry or frustrated, that it was a blurry-eyed, simplistic belief. Mm-hmm. So then after I worked at the YMCA, I went back and went to college in Fort Collins, Colorado State University, and studied English. So I'm working on my English degree, and I'm working as a carpenter, building apartment complexes, still trying to become a firefighter at some point, but we'll see where it goes.
That's a really cool story. I like your story. I like how your story has a lot of the really important elements of a meaningful future. Because you've done a lot of different things and you've had failure. People that don't have failure, they don't learn something. And there's things that failure and suffering teach that almost nothing else teaches us, informs us, like suffering and failure do. And at the same time, you were given you obviously come from a family that is serious about their faith and from a tradition that's serious about their faith. Some people compare the Missouri Synod Lutherans to the Christian Reformed Church, the two of these Protestant, small sort of breakaway Protestant movements that did so to try to maintain a certain seriousness about the faith. So I hope you get a chance to be a firefighter. But along the way, you know, the experiences in the YMCA, you know, EMT certification. I'm always amazed at how lousy the pay is for EMTs. You would think, you know, nurses are well paid, doctors are well paid. EMTs are often the bottom of the barrel. It's astounding. But anyway.
Yeah, definitely your entry level EMTs don't get paid much. You need to get your paramedic before you start making some real money.
Okay. Yeah. So what do you want to talk about today? What's on your mind?
So what was on my mind, I think what I want to get into is how we go about making disciples of all nations, kind of just this broad evangelistic, I don't want to say tactic because that's a little derogatory sounding to a lot of people. But when I was, for example, when I was at Colorado State University, probably similar to a lot of campuses, there's the square where everyone does their causes. And there would always be Christians trying to talk to people going through the square. And while I don't think I know more than they do, at the time I was very frustrated with their approach to it, because in the groups that I would hang out with at college, they would either try to avoid the square or they would get very angry at these people for various reasons that I'm sure people listening to this already know him. Just the solo scriptura kind of stuff, coming to someone and saying, don't you know you're a sinner? Don't you want to be saved? And I was a little frustrated with the fact that these people are trying to use the Bible to people who don't really believe the Bible in the first place. And maybe don't even believe that they are sinners. And so I've, in my life, I've been very proud when it comes to, proud in the negative sense. When I've tried to evangelize, I've really thought that I had all the answers at some points. And I had an experience about 3 years ago that really, that where God spoke to me personally, in not in an audible way, but just that feeling that I get. And it's the only time in my life where I've really felt the voice of God. And it was essentially telling me that I was far too proud, and that I was talking about the Bible and talking about Christ and God in general in a way that I wasn't really justified in talking that way as to how sure I was. But I really felt like I was reaching people, which was the hard thing to kind of rectify with that. So like at the YMCA, for one example, I would bring in like Nietzsche, who a lot of people think is a simple atheist. I thought that he has some spiritual aspects in his philosophy, and that it's what he's railing against is really the Christian God and how Christians act in the world. So I didn't, I'm not quite sure how now to go about being an evangelist without all this rationalization, because you talk a lot about Jonathan Haidt on your podcast, and I just finished all of his books, and The Righteous Mind was one of the best books that I've ever read. The Elephant and the Rider really put that conviction into sharp focus, because I had been trying to rationally convince people of God and the Bible, whereas I've seen the lasting impacts that I have are the relational evangelism.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think people have so much information nowadays. So if you're going to give someone a rational and systematic reason for something, then they can always look and find something that contradicts that. What can't be contradicted sometimes is when someone has been your friend or your family member for years, and they've seen that it's not just a formula, it's something that applies into your life. And obviously I'm not perfect, and I could probably work a lot harder to show people that in my own life, but I've been kind of wrestling with, I still read a lot of C.S. Lewis and a lot of apologetics books, and I just got done with John Walton's Lost World of Genesis 1. So I don't know exactly when to bring in those rational and systematic approaches to it.
Well, let me ask you this question. What is your goal? What is your evangelistic goal? And what do you think your evangelistic goal should be?
That's a good question. Because I myself am non-denominational, which is, C.S. Lewis talks about at the beginning of Mere Christianity, that I'm sitting in the hallway right now. And so I can kind of bring people into the hallway, but he talks about in the rooms is where the meals and the fires are. And that's something that I can't really pull people into if I'm not in one of those rooms.
Now, when you say you're non-denominational, does that mean you're going to a non-denominational church, or you're not really going anywhere right now?
I'm going to an Assemblies of God church. And, but I don't describe to all of the doctrine of theirs. So, So it's
why are you going there? I completely understand that, having grown up Missouri Sunday Lutheran, to say you're going to Assemblies of God Church, there's going to be people, there's going to be a little resistant to that. But it's just an honest question, because there are reasons you're going there. You're going there for reasons. There are always reasons underneath, whether we know what those reasons are, and those reasons scale all the way up to divine providence. I mean, these are hard questions, but it's an interesting aspect of your story.
Yeah. Well, the reason I go to the Assemblies of God Church is that I can't get worship here. And I can't get the physical, the communion with other believers. I can do that through things like this, or talking to people that I know.
Yeah.
But there's a certain opening that happens when I go to church.
Yeah.
And it's just a combination of all of everything there, the sights and the sounds and the smell of a new building and everybody singing, that gives me, that opens up my emotions and not just my mind to God to talk to me, I guess.
Now, when you, what level are you relating to the church? Are you just kind of going there every week, in and out? Are you known there? Because you said, well, you don't subscribe necessarily to, you know, everything that the AFG is about. But what's the quality of your relationship with that church?
Well, that's another thing. Is I've never felt part of a church community in my life, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've been going to church my entire life since I can ever remember. But when I go to church, I don't. I've gone to the little confirmation things that they have to become a member of the church, but I've never hung out with these people outside of church. I've never stuck around after the service to talk to people. And it is a pretty massive church, so that's definitely one of the hindrances with that. But there's a certain hesitation, and I don't know if I really understand why, but I've never really gotten into that community.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you go to it because it's massive? I mean, because that's a dynamic too, that I... You know, as a small church pastor, I know that sometimes people leave small churches because they want to avoid some things. And so then they tend to, but they're, you know, and I really love how you laid this out with Lewis's hallway and rooms, because it sounds like at least to some degree, you've lived your life in the hallway. Because you want to be where there's rooms and fireplaces, and you know, this is Lewis, so there's pipe smoking and drinking, and you know, you're looking for that home.
Yeah. And I'd say that, if I'm being honest, I think that is one of the reasons that I go to a massive church, is just the anonymity of it all.
Yeah.
And to be able to go in and out without being stopped to talk about how my journey's going. How I would love to talk to people about how my journey's going.
Yeah.
But throughout my life, I have been a little, I felt like they definitely try and talk to you a little more than they know you.
Yeah.
If you, so say I smoked a pipe, for example, we're talking about that with Lewis.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in the Missouri Synod Church that would see that as a sin.
Yeah.
And maybe rightfully so. Your body's a temple, so.
Yeah, yeah. Pipe smoking. Yeah, sure. We don't do that really for our health. Not our physical health.
Yeah. But so say if you went to someone and you said, I smoke a pipe. There's a difference between saying that, wow, you should stop doing that, or why do you do that?
Yeah.
Is that trying to substitute that for something else? Is it an escape mechanism? Or, so that's something if I'm being honest, I would like to avoid, but that's also part of it. So that's a hard dilemma there.
Well, it's I mean, your story is so, I love your story because it speaks to the dilemmas of the church moments right now on many, many, many levels. The church fights about the church disunity, Protestant fragmentation. Oh, there's plenty of fragmentation amongst the Orthodox and the Catholics too. I shouldn't just pick on the Protestants. It's easier to pick on the Protestants because I am one. But church fragmentation, longing to be known, but a reasonable concern that it's just really hard to get these things into words and get them right. And so the stuckness that I hear coming from you of, so here you are, these are such important issues. Here you're a serious Christian. You're obviously committed to Christ.
I'd like to think so.
Well, everything you've told me leads me to believe that, that the shape of the Christian life for someone in your situation, you know, there's a real longing for, now every Christian longs for completeness. In this age, our stories are unfinished. But, I mean, you want to go into the room. You want to sit down. You're looking for home. And that's central in a lot of Lewis's writings. Because he lived that way. I mean, the more Lewis you read, you know, when he went to church, and he was someone who decided, okay, he didn't like the music. The sermons were sometimes bad. The people were annoying, but he decided to go there and to do it because, you know, at least partly in Lewis, he needed to take his medicine and he knew it. So he would go to the little church with the clergy who was, you know, could not preach as well as Lewis could, and the music was bad and the people were annoying. But in time, and maybe, you know, maybe for Lewis, you do get the sense, at least I get a sense from reading Lewis and a number of his biographies, that in some ways, although he became a settled Anglican. Now I'm gonna, a bunch of Anglicans hearing this are probably gonna pull a face and write a comment, but that's what happens. I don't care. I do care, but it's part of the process. So Anglicanism itself is sort of both a compromise and a try and an attempt to have it both ways. That's what you get when you have a national church, and the Dutch had the same dynamic. And so Missouri Synod Lutheranism, like the Christian Reformed Church, is kind of a splinter, a breaker. We're gonna finally do this thing right. I mean, that's what the founders of the Christian Reformed Church, and pushing against the American transplant of the state church, and, you know, Missouri Synod, you know, resisting modernity and modernization. So we're gonna continue to take our faith seriously, and we're gonna continue to, you know, another thing that came up interesting in your introduction was you mentioned sola scriptura two or three times, and so what does that mean to you, sola scriptura, in the context of your story?
Yeah. So to be honest, the first time I started hearing about that was on this podcast. So you can correct me if I have it wrong, but
no, it's a flash word right now among, you know, the conversations that I have, especially with those who are leaving Protestantism and going to Orthodoxy.
But as far as I understand it, growing up in the Missouri Synod Church, there were questions that weren't either worth asking or were forbidden to be asked because they weren't directly answered in the Bible, or the Bible says a certain thing and it's taken as literal without any symbolic meaning or kind of just mysterious meaning. So talk about John Walton in his Lost World of Genesis 1. He essentially takes an agnostic approach to how the Bible interprets it. He presents all of the different arguments, and I ultimately come down with him, well, on the interpretation that it's a functional story. But when I was in the Missouri Synod Church, that wasn't something that was even considered. So we weren't necessarily able to talk to people outside of the church in a way that would be.
Yeah, we're just the connection just got a little wonky, but we didn't lose it completely.
Especially when I went to high school.
You were talking about issues of Genesis 1 and John Walton and Missouri Synod. John Walton writes his book in some ways to address issues like the community you grew up in, and of course Walton is from Wheaton, and I mean those tensions and those conversations are always something in play.
Yeah. So my big question when it comes to that is how do we speak the language of when Paul says, "I came to the Greek as a Greek and the Jew as a Jew." There's probably a lot of ways to interpret that, but when Paul went to Athens and he said he sees the unknown God and he says that is Jesus, he incorporates their belief system into what he's teaching. And then you can see it in other ways with how the Catholics did their kind of colonization of different areas of the world, where they would incorporate the winter solstice and all of those celebrations. And then in the 60s, in the Jesus hippie movement, they would speak the language of the hippies. And so I didn't feel that Missouri Synod was doing that very well. They weren't able to speak scientifically or talk to the angst of my generation. Mm-hmm. You have people that are disillusioned with everything. And, you know, so with the Assemblies of God Church, there's a very broad theology, I guess you could say. But there's the hard thing is how do you speak to people without losing your what you would consider as narrow doctrine, like essential doctrine, essentially.
Yeah. Well, and again, when churches, the Assemblies of God Church that has 75 people in the corner of a small town in the West or in the South is a different thing from the Assemblies of God mega church. There's, you know, something happens with a lot of mega churches where the denominational moniker and some of the denominational distinctives sort of take a back seat to this broader non-denominational evangelical approach, which is usually some doctrinal statements back there. You know, the difference between a mega church that's Presbyterian or Southern Baptist or Assemblies of God is sometimes less by virtue of the size. And that's, these things matter, and they change things. And something like the Missouri Synod Lutheran and the Christian Reformed Church to one degree or another, the Christian Reformed Church less so because it is such an ethnic denomination historically, but the issues that the denomination itself is working through as a body are a little bit different. And Well, I guess my question for you is, and it's like, you know, what do you want? Now you're working towards, you know, hopefully, you know, finding a job as a firefighter, which I think is a great profession. I think it's a great profession. You're obviously a sincere Christian. You want to hold on to your faith, and you'd like to see it grow. You want to be effective as a witness for Christ. You also want to know the truth. You're willing to look at difficult questions. I mean, if you're reading Jonathan Haidt and C.S. Lewis, you're saying, you know, I'm not afraid to read Jonathan Haidt. I can learn something from Jonathan Haidt, and I'm not afraid that my Christian faith is going to disappear. So you're not a bunker Christian, and you're not, you know, you're also willing to strike out from your Missouri Synod Lutheran roots. So pull a little Jordan Peterson future authoring here. What 10 years from now do you want your life to look like? What are some of the aspects, the key aspects you would like to see fulfilled?
I'm 27 now, so when I'm 37, I would love to be married with a couple children.
Yeah.
And part of a church. I'd say at this point, I would like to be part of a denomination if I can find one.
Yeah.
But I would also like to be the kind of person that keeps dogma a certain distance from myself.
Okay.
But that might not be possible. And then I'd also like to be someone who can talk to a very wide variety of people about my faith.
Yeah.
And so since I was out of high school, I had never really looked into Christianity and how wide I could make it or how narrow it needed to be. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I was kind of creeping towards pantheism, mm-hmm. just this mm-hmm. indistinct God that can mm-hmm. apply to anyone or anything. Mm-hmm. And I've pulled that back a little bit just because C.S. Lewis helped a lot with that, just because he presented all of those options and yeah. talked about those.
Yeah.
And then I consider this emergent God of evolution. Yeah. So I've come to a place where my faith it might be a little too broad, but it's not nothing because it's been stretched so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So mostly just be the kind of father that I need to be.
Mm.
I'd like to get married eventually, but
nothing on the horizon right now.
I am dating someone right now, and she is amazing. But that was another thing that I wanted to kind of talk to you about, is that she is a believer, and but it's not really sure what that means.
Yeah.
And I've made the commitment in my own life that I'm going to get married to someone who shares my beliefs, because I think that's the only stable way to bring up children, is when both parents have this common ethos or belief system.
Yeah.
And if the parents are fighting about God and fighting about existence in general, then that could make for very fractured children.
Yeah.
But there's also some, sorry.
No, go ahead.
So there's a lot of questions that she has and questions that I have that are complicated because we're dating, and some of these questions might end our relationship.
Yeah.
She identifies as bisexual, and that's something that I've been wrestling back and forth with. I've read a few scientific books on it and religious commentaries, but I've come to kind of the same stance that you're at, and I still love her, but I'm not sure how that's going to work out in the long run. So
yeah, that would be a question I'd have.
So a lot of Christians would say, why did you get together with her in the first place if you knew that? And kind of complicated.
It's complicated. But a question that I would have is that certainly, and I think you're exactly right, that, you know, the equally yoked thing is partly about a matchup between you two. But I would also like to throw in the question, how well do the two of you talk about these issues? Because that's your ability to process these issues together is really vital, because if these issues are such in the both of you, and I'm not putting it on you or on her, or because often it's a matter of that you will learn something about fittedness in that too. If so, these issues are you know where each other's at and you can't talk about it. That itself is a big issue. If you can actually talk about it productively, it doesn't mean you necessarily come to agreement at the end of a specific conversation, but if you can sort of still be together with the difference, even with the unsettledness, not saying that you've necessarily arrived at a destination, but that you have a sense that the conversation between you about these difficult things is productive. And it might be difficult, but you both have a sense that it's regularly fruitful. That's an important thing to look for. And if you're having difficulty with it, to be concerned about as well. Because, I mean, part of the truth about marriage is that you will both continue to change as years go by. And so you grew up in a Missouri Synod Lutheran, a fairly tight, specific box. You've now sort of branched out and you've got, a little different view of the world, but when I listen to you, you're still quite rooted. I hear that in you, but you're also non-anxious in that you can go to an Assemblies of God church. You can handle a degree of dissonance between your doctrinal positions and theirs, and still, at least at the level that you're involved in the church, find it productive and working. And so that to me says a fair amount about you. Now, questions would be not just in terms of, let's say, what your girlfriend thinks in terms of her stance, her positions on things right now, but does she like going to church with you? That's a question. Because some of those, when we think about equally yoked in our sort of Protestant propositional leanings, we tend to write down positions and see if, they match. And that's a very important, legitimate thing to do, because that expresses one aspect. That's one way to get at what's going on inside of us. But there's also the behavioral and the procedural. So how do we talk about our differences? And are there a lot of things that we just can't talk about because they always end in a fight? Because if that's the pattern now, that's probably going to continue to be the pattern. And when it comes to having children and raising children, and because children take 18 to 20 years just to get out of the house. And that's a long time. And so you got dad and he's over here, and mom and she's over there. Ideally dad and mom are able to at least stay on the same page enough that they can negotiate and come to some kind of settlement so that you're exactly right about the kids. If dad and mom can't talk about something, the kids are going to avoid it, because the last thing they want to do is threaten the foundations of their world. And the foundations of their world are the marriage of dad and mom. So if they know that certain issues are flashpoints, now, as the kids get older, the kids will become cognizant of it and be able to manage it. But that avoidance is an issue in and of itself too.
Or maybe they'll go to one parent and avoid the other parent.
Right, play one off the other, which is worse still. Because then suddenly, not only are they fearful about shaking the foundation of their being. Andrew Root, who I'm going to have a conversation with him, actually. I'm talking about that with him now. Before he wrote these Pastoring in a Secular Age and The Congregation in a Secular Age, some of these books that he's riffing on Charles Taylor, he wrote a very, he was a youth pastor. He's teaching actually at a Lutheran seminary. I don't know if you've read any of his books, but he wrote a very searching book on children of divorce. I think it's called Children of Divorce, because both he and his wife came from broken families. And I think it was his wife, his fiance, her parents split up just as they were about to get married. And he makes the point in that book that when parents split up, there's an ontology, and I'm probably using that metaphorically, but there's an ontological relationship between the child and the union of the parents. And so, you know, you're right to think long and hard about these questions as you consider marriage. That's wisdom. In the end, you know, you'll make a decision and you'll go for something, or you won't go for something, and the truth is, you can't know everything that's coming down the road. So you try to know as much as you can. I guess what I'm suggesting is that don't just know the propositions of you and your girlfriend. Also know the dynamics of the interplay. Can you talk about, okay, her identity is bisexual? How does that conversation go? Because there will be lots more propositions that come into your life that you can't anticipate. And some of those skills about how to negotiate them and talk about them, those can be learned. And that's what, you know, counseling and wisdom and all that stuff helps you to do. But part of that is also sort of built into both of you. And so that's why it's another thing to think about beyond just the propositional aspects of where the two of you are at now.
Yeah. So, and I want to be clear. I told her I was going to be on here, so okay. She's all right with
it. I won't post. We're not live streaming, and that's intentionally. And I will send you a copy. And if you, you know, if you'd like to watch this with her before you consider posting that, there's a little wisdom in there. Trust me.
Definitely.
Honey, I went on the YouTube and I talked about you in front of a couple of thousand strangers, and I said these things, and yeah, that can go all sorts of bad.
Right, definitely. No, but that is the main thing. That's why I've been with her for a year, is that she is willing to have the hard conversations. Wow. And she doesn't block me out when I have questions. And I've been trying harder in my life to be less sharp, yeah, in my interpretations.
Yep.
But I thought it was interesting that just in my approach to talking to her and a lot of other people, at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, when Sam and Frodo are going into the forest and they meet up with the high elves that are going to the Grey Havens.
Yeah.
What the elf that they meet with says, Frodo says, how should I, what should I do? I'm getting chased by these ringwraiths and I'm scared and I don't know who's going to help me. And this high elf refuses to give him direction.
Yeah.
He says, advice is dangerous even from the wise to the wise. And, yeah. And then I've also noticed that most people that we would consider wise in the world speak very indirectly.
Yeah.
And it can get very frustrating for me because when you read, I know Jesus even, he uses parables for a reason. He doesn't just tell them, do this, don't do this. He does do that sometimes, but most of the time he uses parables. And the way that I would like to speak with everyone else, and especially my girlfriend, is in that way that is still going somewhere. So it's not so ambiguous and just doing platitudes, essentially, that it doesn't actually go anywhere, but it's a thin line to walk, it seems.
Well, I think that's, you know, it's one of my favorite scenes in the Gospels is somebody shouts out to Jesus, you know, tell my brother to divide the inheritance. Jesus basically talks about, you know, it's, you know, be on the guard against love of money, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And it's like, no, Jesus, it was a simple question. My brother, probably what's happening is the brother is holding the inheritance and refusing to divide it with his brother, which is what he should do. And so in some ways, the moral answer is clear. Why doesn't Jesus give the moral answer? And Jesus says, the money is not the issue, my friend. Your heart is the issue. And your relationship with your brother is in some ways more important than you getting your hands on the money. And if Jesus was talking to the brother, he might say something else, but you're exactly right. And Tolkien had a lot of wisdom and poured it into the books in ways that didn't come out in the movie sometimes.
And then this is a little bit random, but have you read C.S. Lewis's the Apologist's Evening Prayer?
No.
It's an amazing poem. I think we have a few minutes left. Do you mind if I read it to you real quick?
No, go right ahead.
Okay, still hear me?
Yep.
Okay, so from all my lame defeats and oh, much more, from all the victories that I seemed to score, from cleverness shot forth on thy behalf, at which, while angels weep, the audience laugh. From all my proofs of thy divinity, thou who wouldest give no sign, deliver me. Thoughts are but coins. Let me not trust instead of thee their thin-worn image of thy head. From all my thoughts, even of my thoughts of thee, O thou fair silence, fall and set me free. Lord of the narrow gate and the needle's eye, take from me all my trumpery, lest I die. I thought that was so interesting. Wow. I found that a little while ago, and it kind of goes into, I know you talk about how he started out his very direct apologetic works, Mere Christianity, the Problem of Pain. And then as he got older, he went into more storytelling and more subtle interpretations of his faith with Till We Have Faces. I love that book, and it's hard to really understand what that's really about. It's about like overbearing love, sure, but there's a lot more in there.
Yeah.
So as far as how I've taken that command to go and make disciples of all nations, just these little things have really changed the way that I've thought about doing that.
Yeah.
Because it's C.S. Lewis. And when you look at Tolkien, I've always heard that Tolkien was a little frustrated with Lewis doing his apologetics.
Yeah.
Because Tolkien was this, he probably thought of it as kind of a graven image, if in my own opinion, that it was being, faith was being put into a box by Lewis, oversimplifying it. And that people might get the wrong interpretations from being told so directly. And then if you read, Tolkien has a poem, it's a lot longer, so I won't read that one, but Tolkien has a poem called Mythopoeia.
Uh-huh.
And it's something that I think Jonathan Peugeot would love. It's all about the symbolism of the world. He talks a lot about trees and how we label them and we speak life into them, and how God spoke life into creation.
Well, this might be a good place to land the plane.
Sounds good.
Eli, this has been a joy. And let me, would you mind if I just prayed for you just quickly right now? Because.
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay, let me do that. Lord, thank you for Eli, and thank you for the work that you've done in his life and his heart. He clearly loves you and wants to live a life in service to you and your kingdom. And like all of us, he has challenges in his life. In some ways, he's been living in the hallway for a very long time, and he wants to find a room where there is warm fire and good meals and a family, a church family, and company around him. And he wants to find a wife that can be a partner with him, and can be a partner with him and bringing children into the world, and bringing children into that warm room with good meals and warm fires. And Lord, he wants good things. He wants a career firefighting, using his mind and his body to save people and their property from the ravages of chaos. Lord, he wants good things, and I want you to give him good things. And Lord, you are the giver of good things, but you, as we talked about earlier, you also bring hard things, and even those hard things are for our good. So I ask, Lord, that you would bless him. And I pray, Lord, that you would give him good things. Give both he and his girlfriend wisdom to talk about whether they're a match for each other, and whether they should proceed to deeper levels of their relationship. I pray, Lord, that you would guide them both. And I thank you, Lord, for the work that you've already done in his life. I thank you for giving him good mentors like C.S. Lewis, who can teach him wisdom. And I pray, Lord, that wisdom might take up residence in his heart, and he might continue to go on with a long life and bless the world. So hear my prayer now in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Eli. This has been a delight. So I will send this recording to you, and you can check it out with your girlfriend. And if you decide you'd like to share it further, give me the green light. I'd be happy to share this. It's wonderful.
All right. Thank you for taking the time to do these. It means a lot.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. See ya.